Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
Now, here's a six-pack of questions.
Professor, thanks for joining us a little bit later. How you doing?
Good. How about you?
Oh, we're doing great, and we're really enjoying the Mariners watching that sweep. And I don't know if you saw any of the broadcast today, John, but D. Gordon, the amount of enthusiasm and just the fun that he has, he kind of reminds me of football players. And it looks like a football sideline more than it does a dugout when he's out there.
No, he's phenomenal with that. I'm just amazed to see just how excited he is, what he's able to energize, you know, what he's able to do on the base pads, how good he is at second base. I mean, what a great acquisition. I mean, a guy now that's a part of that young core group that's taking over the team and doing such a good job and allows them to, you know, just manufacture runs, get runs when necessary, and then just be better at the end of games than maybe they are at the beginning.
Hey, and we're giving tickets away here. Don't forget, the Mariners are back in town tomorrow night with a 9-game homestand. Saturday is turn ahead the clock night. Sunday's the big Paxton bobble game. And next Tuesday is Patriotic Fireworks night. All week long, 710 ESPN Seattle's giving you a chance to win tickets to an upcoming Mariners game. In order to win, you're going to want to remember this code word. Change up. Remember that word. Don't call now. Remember that word and keep listening to our show for your chance to win. I'll cue you later. Hey, John, one of the things I saw on the NFL Network, Damian Woody said, or I'm sorry, that was ESPN. He said he would cut Jameis Winston over what's gone on. And I don't know if that's maybe he's thinking about a whole lot of other things that he's done or that, you know, this guy should have matured by now. But I thought, wow, that was coming from an ex-player. That was pretty extreme.
It is, and I think you go through the columnists down in Tampa, and you're going to have one or two saying the same thing, knowing that it's not going to happen. It's not going to be a realistic thing to do because Damian Woody can say it, and maybe he's right in saying it, but you're not Jason Light, the general manager, and you're not Dirk Cutter, the head coach. If you would cut Jameis Winston and go through the season with Ryan Fitzpatrick, you're going to be looking for a job next year. I mean, Jameis still is a quarterback capable of winning 9 or 10 games. He's still a plus type of a quarterback. I know that he does have that gunslinger mentality and may have a tendency to throw a few interceptions, and certainly his things off the field may not be as good. But also what you're talking about, this incident, as bad as it was with the Uber driver, was in his rookie year. Okay, so he's made a few dumb comments in the last year or so, but he's not done as many dumb things. And so I have to think that the players are going to stand by him, the team's going to stand by him, but he does have to grow and try to start figuring some things out, because I think, as you saw the strong wording that they had in the letter today to him, next one, they may banish him for life.
Wow. For life? Wow. What'd you think of his apology, John? He said he quit drinking.
Oh, that was okay. That was good. I mean, certainly didn't match the statement that he made when the story came out from the Uber driver, you know, almost like giving it a fake news type of thing. But the fact that he admitted that, you know, he did it because, you know, remember, this was going to be a 6-game suspension. And by the way that he did it, you know, he turns out he accepted three games. So it was a settlement. Because, again, it would have been 6 if he didn't take that settlement. And so he had to admit it and now admit that he's wrong. And I think it was a good comment to say that he said he's quitting drinking. Let's see if he does. But, you know, he was apparently out of control, because now you've seen the testimony of the two friends and the two former players that were in the car. You know, Ronald Darby says, well, you know, we had to put him in a different Uber. And the other player, who was a friend of his, you know, who's now in jail, said that he was so out of control with the way that he was behaving, and apparently did probably drink too much, that he was prone. And that's why they put him in the other Uber. So, you hope he's grown up. But again, these are incidents from 3 years ago. He's paying the price right now for them. That's fine. But, you know, again, cutting him is a little too drastic.
Well, even in the best case scenario, John, aren't the Bucks in a tough spot there in the division they're in?
Oh, yeah, no question. And tough spot, because it's almost going to concede the season. I mean, they have the toughest opening schedule in football. At New Orleans, they host Pittsburgh, and they host Philadelphia. 37-11 are those three teams, and they're all three playoff-caliber teams that now they're going to get off to an 0-3 start in the best division in football that had three playoff teams. You go off to an 0-3 start, you're not going to be able to come back. They're going to be like the Chargers last year. Chargers got off to an 0-4 start, came back, won 9 out of the last 12 games, didn't make it. And, of course, if you don't make it this year, I mean, bad things are going to happen to this team. They may give up on Jameis Winston after this season, because I would have to think that the people making the decision are not going to be Jason Light, the general manager, and Dirk Cutter, the head coach.
Hey, John, in Tennessee, Derek Morgan, the linebacker down there, and he's a good one, he said that he thinks that it is Derek Henry's time at running back, and he's been patient because he's had DeMarco Murray. What's the relationship between those two guys, and do you agree with him?
I agree, yeah. I mean, and I sensed it last year in the Tennessee game in September last season, because I know on the sidelines there was a knee injury that was bothering DeMarco Murray, and Murray refused to take himself out of the game because he realized if he did, he may be Wally Pipped and not get the job back. And so he fought through the knee injury, ran pretty well, did some good things, and really tried to stay ahead of the curve all year. But then you look at Henry, you know, Henry is this big, thick, powerful runner, and now he's set to take over as the starting running back for the team. So I think DeMarco sensed it, and we're talking, this was what, week 3 or week 4 in the season, and so now he was able to fight it off as best possible. But now what you look at, Henry's now the rising star who's going to be the starter. And DeMarco Murray doesn't even have a job.
I remember last year throwing this stat out there, the combine numbers between Derrick Henry and Von Miller. I thought this was interesting. They were like almost exactly the same size and had the same jumping ability, the same speed. He was a little bit faster than Von Miller. But, I mean, basically, you look at Derrick Henry, what a specimen. I mean, he's the same size as Von Miller, and he's running downhill at you. I mean, my God. That guy
is, I think he's, what, 245, 250?
Yeah, I think they had him at 245 at the combine. He might even be more than that, and all muscle. So, yeah, I agree with him as well. And how about DeMarco Murray? Running back, shoot, he's 30 now, isn't he?
Yeah. And he's had a lot of carries. You know, honestly, and this is sometimes sad to say, but, in that last year that he was in Dallas, they overused him. Now, he had the great season. He was able to parlay it into a somewhat decent contract in Philadelphia, which turned out to be a bad choice because he really wasn't a fit in Chip Kelly's offense. But, you know, they used him up and then just kind of let him go. I thought that was kind of sad. And he's really a good back. I was happy for him that he was able to get to Tennessee and be able to really run well and do a good job, because he is a good back. And honestly, I thought at the beginning of the offseason, he'd have been a viable option to try to bring into Seattle. Probably wise that they didn't, because now I think they feel so much better about where they are with Chris Carson, Rashad Penny, CJ Procise, and Mike Davis. I think they really feel good about that group. So in retrospect, I probably was wrong in the thinking of that. But no, he still, I think, has some football left, but apparently not a lot of other teams do.
So the Titans have Marcus Mariota, Blaine Gabbert, and Luke Falk at quarterback. What are the chances that Falk will push Gabbert for the backup job?
He won't. No, it won't happen this year.
Not at all, John.
Not at all. 100% no.
Zero.
Yeah, zero. Yeah, because it's the changeover year for him. And remember, they're doing it with a first-time offensive coordinator, a first-time head coach. He's coming out of the air raid offense. He's going to need a year to just try to settle into an offense that he's not used to. And so because of that, and remember, this is a tough race in the AFC South. I mean, you don't want to concede anything and get too young and not good. I mean, I think that by next year, he can take over and be the backup and be a pretty good backup. Because, again, when I look at the way that he throws and what he does, I really compare him to Kirk Cousins. I thought there's a very good comparison between the two. And I have good things ahead, I think, for Falk, but not in year one.
Okay, so on ESPN, they're ranking people's rosters by player, and it goes from poor, which is red, all the way up to elite, which is blue. They have one elite player for the Seattle Seahawks. One is ranked elite. Which one do you think it is?
That'd be Bobby Wagner.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Bobby Wagner. Not Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised by that. I mean, look, he was number 11 on the top 100
list,
right?
Yeah, but they had him, I think, as the number five quarterback as far as the ratings. Because actually, I went through it, and there's a little uniqueness there when you put those 80s and 90s. You know, the 90s are the elites, the blues, and I think what the 80s are in the greens.
Yeah, 80s is like light blue
So you ready for this? They have 47 safeties rated in the 80s and 46 defensive tackles. They have six tight ends in the 80s or 90s, only won it, I think, in the 90s, which is Rob Gronkowski. You know, I think they have 16 quarterbacks, which I think is pretty fair and right on. Think about eight running backs. But when you really look at the breakdown, and this is where you kind of wonder, it's like, how are these numbers? And, you know, I know if Danny was listening, he's probably be ripping him right now. They had 95 offensive players listed, and it was 197, I think, defensive players. There's something a little off in those numbers.
Yeah. Well, and then the other thing, and look, maybe they're right. I know offensive line, not very popular here, but...
Nor in their ratings.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Ethan Posick is poor. He's rated poor. Wasn't he on the all-rookie team?
Mm-hmm. He was on the all-rookie team, and yeah. I know that he's one of the projections as one of the 25, you know, age 25 and younger guys that have star potential.
Yeah. The other one, Ed Dixon. I mean, rating him as a blocker... I mean, I think he's an elite blocker. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you look at his numbers, they weren't really throwing the ball to him because they have Greg Olsen there. So, anyway, whether they're fair or not, I think Seahawks fans will be. And you know what? This is going to be one of those type of underdog years anyway.
Yeah.
So
they only had about six centers listed. I think it was maybe 15 guards. I mean, again, they were so light on the offensive line. As, you know, where they like certain offensive linemen, they just don't like a lot of them.
Now, John, Danielle Hunter from the Vikings signed a big contract today or yesterday.
Yeah.
5 years, $72 million, $40 million guaranteed. And it's of significance here in Seattle. Bob Condotta writing about it in the Times today. The comparisons to Frank Clark, the possibility that Clark might hold out. Will he want a contract as big as Hunter's? Where do you fall on that one?
I think he's going to come in a little under Hunter, because Danielle was able – you look at the numbers, and Danielle Hunter has 47 games that he's played. Frank Clark has 47. They each have started 16 games. All right, so what are their sack numbers? 25.5 for Hunter, 22 for Clark. Those are really good numbers. But, you know, even if you look at the Pro Football Focus ratings, you know, they have an 82 and change on Hunter, and they have like an 81 on Clark. So they're really close, but all the numbers give a little bit of an edge to Hunter over Clark. And so if you're Frank Clark, I mean, you may want to try to go for the 15. That's fine, but you wouldn't mind taking 14. So I think the number is 14. And again, that might be more than what the Seahawks want to pay, but there's no question that he can ask for 14 because he's right there with Hunter. Hunter's a good young player. And the other thing about Hunter, he's only 23. He's 23 years old,
wow.
3 years in the league. So I think that as long as the Seahawks are comfortable with that, and really when you start to look and compare numbers, okay, so they don't have Richard Sherman, who is making 14. They don't have Michael Bennett, who's making 10. So if you come back and you give 14 to Clark, you give 10, maybe a little bit more than 10 to K.J. Wright, you're basically replacing those contracts and, you know, having more control over the players. It'll be a third contract for K.J. Wright. The only downside, I think, on the 14 to Clark, it pretty well seals the deal on Earl Thomas. Because I guarantee Earl's position is, and you know Earl, he's going to not want to take less than Frank Clark. He's going to say, I'm the best defensive player on the team. I want now to be the best paid player on the team. 13.5 is the right number for Earl because it's above the 13 given to Eric Berry. But I would guarantee if Clark gets 14, he'll want 14.5.
That would make me kind of turn on Earl because, man, you're a safety. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, that's what safeties get paid. You pass rushers get paid $17-16 million. That's not the range for safeties.
Yeah, but Earl Thomas is a future Hall of Famer, and we don't know about Frank Clark.
Yeah, but I mean, if you just look at the market and understanding the market, it's like him trying to get paid the same as a quarterback. Come on, man. Pass rushers are different, and there's going to be a $20 million man, right, John?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's either going to be Aaron Donald or Khalil Mack. They're going to get 20.
Yeah.
Yeah, but really, when you look at, because I mean, what did Chuck Knox or Tom Catlin, I know Tony Dungy, I think, uses the, if you get a sack in a drive, that's going to end the drive at some point. Because now it's going to be hard to overcome the 6, 7, 10 yards that you lose in the sack because it takes away a down and all those problems. And, you know, you get the pressures and all those things. And, Hunter, even though he's probably played a little bit more, he's had a 12.5 sack season. You know, Clark is 9 and 10, which is really good. But the way this game is that those defensive ends, particularly in a 4-3, you know, get okay in year two, much better in year three, and then in year four, really start to break out. And so, for example, if Clark gets the number that you think he might, which is one-third of the 39, 13, you know, all of a sudden, to pay him, the Seahawks are going to have to go to $17 or $18 million next year. I think it's better just to pay him 14 now if you believe that he can get the 13 sacks or anywhere near that.
Hey, as promised, right now, the first caller at 206-421-3776 who can provide us with this hour's code word will win two tickets to the July 3rd Mariners game when the Mariners host the Angels and fans are invited to stay after the game for a true to the red, white, and blue patriotic fireworks show. Find great seats also at mariners.com. And, John, you know, you talk about the sack. You know, when offenses talk about being on schedule, that's the biggest schedule disruptor is a sack. You know, and we talked about it yesterday that, you know, and you brought up a good point, John, about where a lot of the sort of auxiliary sacks came from. Bobby Wagner, 5.5, I believe.
Four and a half. Now it's 4.5 in 2016.
Yeah, Justin.
In a year that they had 10 sacks off of sacks.
10 sacks off of what?
I mean, 10 off the blitzes.
Off the blitzes, gotcha. Yeah, and then R. Coleman.
Justin Coleman.
Yeah, he had a couple.
Yeah, two sacks on blitzes. Yeah.
So that's also another place that you get him. But, yeah, that's just, I don't know, I guess the statement I would make on that is that if Earl Thomas becomes irrational in that way, thinking he should get paid like a pass rusher, then I would be very, very worried about his future here.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's going to be tough because I think what you're looking at, and, you know, clearly if there's no trade, then he has to report at some point, and, you know, he's not going to want to lose the $8.5 million for nothing, and then, you know, you can put him back in. But I really think it puts this team in a position where it's going to be one and done. I think that they might just have to let him go after the season. You know, that's why maybe a trade would be good. But again, it's, you hate to give up. I mean, you can arguably say he's the best remaining defense. Well, no, maybe, I don't know, where would you put him in relationship of Bobby Wagner now? I mean, Earl is so important for that secondary because he gives them the ability to space out the cornerbacks and really run that defense right. Mm-hmm. But Bobby Wagner is now the 21st best player in football, according to the NFL Network, and the players voting for it.
Yeah, and I think this is the first year where Bobby moves ahead of Earl, actually. Mm-hmm. I think Bobby is that good. And, you know, you factor in a little bit of age there, but, yeah, Bobby has just become such a solid player in every way. So, yeah.
I just think that would anger me if I were Earl Thomas, that somebody else was making more than me on that defense. And I know that that's the way it is. That's what you pay for that position. But I still don't think, and I don't necessarily think that Clark should get that extension right now, John. There's no guarantee without Averill and Bennett on that line. You've talked about it before. If he gets double teamed, I imagine he's got the ability to overcome that. But I would wait on that if I were Schneider.
What you're doing is that you may wait and you really put yourself in a tougher position. Now, understand, you know, and again, I track this stuff all the time like the idiot that I am, is that it's hard to get second round picks to get contract extensions. And the reason is they take the same tack. Hey, I'm going to have a good fourth year. If I have a good fourth year, there's one of two things that's going to happen. They're going to let me go as a free agent. They're going to overpay me, or they're going to make me a franchise guy, and the franchise number is going to be 18. I mean, if you think that Frank Clark, who's now consistently for 2 years offered you 9 to 10 sacks, and this is being the number three guy, now he's going to start, wouldn't it be more advisable to get him for 14 now if you can, as opposed to getting him for 18 and then not for sure that you're going to get him?
Yeah, it's a big gamble going into this year. So 3, 10, and 9. You could also ask the question, is he that elite player that we extend him before the season or halfway through? I feel like you tell Frank, look, we're going to get something done during the season.
No, I'd say do it now.
And then you can say, well, let's see how you do. But, yeah. You know, I'm spending other people's money right now, John. Hey, you know what? Let me ask you a question because we're getting ready to open up our phone lines in the next segment. Give us a call at 866-979-3776 or 206-421-3776. John, you've been watching Mariner baseball pretty closely. Who is most responsible for this team at the halfway point? Whether it's Jerry DePoto, Scott Servais, Nelson Cruz, James Paxton, Edwin Diaz, D. Gordon, Gene Segura, What's your answer, John?
Jerry DePoto.
Yeah.
And here's the reason. Again, Scott Servais, you know, maybe number two. And then I think I'll probably take the minority position because I think Edwin Diaz, with his 30 saves and his ability to hold down these one-run games, is next. But I think other people are going to say D. Gordon or Mitch Haniger, and that's fair. But I think it's Jerry DePoto. Why Jerry DePoto? Because look what he was able to do. You know, in the course of the last year, in trades, he was able to get D. Gordon, Mitch Haniger, and Gene Segura, all-star caliber players. He was able to get quality starters in Marco Gonzalez and Mike Leake. He was able to stack the bullpen. Now, again, some of those didn't work out. No GM's going to be perfect. But to take the team that was aging and old and struggling and now to have some young vibrancy and getting guys that are under team control and you know this team can now stay together as opposed to being broke up, I give it to Jerry.
I think we're going to get a lot of those from the calls. Professor, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
It's good to be talking to you again.
Yeah, you too. I know. We finally got our show back.
Exactly. Yeah. Talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. See you, John. Thank you very much. If you missed any of the cold, hard facts brought to you by Coors Light, you can download the podcast at 710.com. All right. There, we gave you the numbers, and let's go back to baseball because that's the most exciting thing going on in town, right? Isn't it, Jim? It's more exciting than
I'm fired up. I'm even, I was checking out the Astros schedule to see who they're going to be playing next. And, you know, the Mariners are coming home for the homestand against Kansas City, the Angels and the Rockies. And, it's just fun to do the scoreboard watch.
Yeah, so give us a call. And we did yesterday on Brock and Sock, we did MVP. And it was somewhere between D. Gordon or Gene Segura. Who else did we have in there?
Some people said
Diaz, Paxton, whatever. But who's most responsible for this team, and professor with a good answer. So give us a call at 866-979-3776, or you can text us at 710-710. That's next on Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Hey, it's the Danny, Dave, and Moore Show. You know you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. And don't forget, June 29th, you can join ESPN at CenturyLink Field for the inaugural Special Olympics Unified Sports Challenge for fun, prizes, and a chance to support the 2018 Special Olympics USA Games. Register a team of four to compete in activities like hot shot basketball, golf putting, oversized darts, bucket pong, and more. Again, it's all in support of the 2018 Special Olympics USA Games coming to Seattle. Learn more at underdogseattle.com. Jim, my choice before we get to the callers, it's D. Gordon. And I didn't even really think, I didn't know until I started thinking about, well, actually, you know what? The broadcast today kind of helped me because D. Gordon, with all of his antics and everything in the dugout, I feel like he's brought so much more. And ask Jerry DePoto, look, he's hitting, what, 286. He's got 21 stolen bases. Maybe those are his two best stats that he has, but he's so much more than that. I've never seen a player that means more to a team than his stats, than D. Gordon. So he's to me the reason, and we're not calling this MVP, it's the reason why they are where they are. That's to me my answer, D. Gordon.
Well, and just look what he did too, Dave. And I know the tangible part of it with going to center field from Miami. When once he got here, I didn't think that would be some sort of seamless transition. I thought it might come at a cost of D. Gordon struggling in the batter's box. We haven't seen that. We haven't seen him struggle in center field. Then when Cano was suspended, he just went over to second base and resumed his old position, being the Gold Glove second baseman that he is. So, yeah, I just love seeing him in the dugout. He's like, he reminds me of Leonis Martin, but you get the production from Gordon along with the excitement level and building everybody up in the dugout and in the clubhouse. So that's a good pick. But I like Scott Servais. I just think, and I know DePoto assembled this team, brought all these players in, and made all these different trades, Haniger and Segura bring him in. We know about all these trades and all these players that have paid off and the deals that he's made, but I think Servais makes it all work. He keeps everybody together, the culture that he's created, starting with the pool table, everything else down there in Peoria, and just talking to everybody every day, and he just seems like a guy that most people would want to play for. Everybody we talk to, and this was even last year, the year before, when they weren't playing that well, everybody commended Scott Servais. There are people out there that wonder about how he handles his bullpen. It's so easy to look in hindsight and criticize a manager when he screws up. But I just think all in all that Servais gets a lot of credit with the injuries they've had, they've managed to overcome everything, and here they are 20 games over 500.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. We're looking at, like, the difference between Pete Carroll and John Schneider kind of here, right? It's the recipe, you know, the guy who goes grocery shopping and the guy who cooks it up. So I'll tell you what, let's take a call here. SeaTac, we got Alex from SeaTac. How you doing out there, Alex?
I'm doing good, guys. How's it going?
Good. Who's the best reason or the biggest reason why the Mariners are with
them? You guys just stole the words out of my mouth. I was saying B. Gordon. I was also considering Edwin Diaz, but just B is just on there. He's just exciting to watch. Watching him fly from second to home, it's almost like watching Marshawn Lynch.
Well, yeah, Alex, when you see him today, what he did, so he beats out the infield single to get that rally started in the 10th inning, and then scores on what was basically a single. I mean, it was bobbled by Rasmus out there, but I don't think there's another player on the team that would have scored on that.
Yeah, he's just so fast, and it's almost nail-biting sometimes.
All right, I appreciate it, Alex. Thanks for the call. You know, coming up next year, we've got a top five caller, Jim.
From the Brock and Salk show?
Brian, do you think you're special or something like that because you're top five caller on the Brock and Salk show?
You know, Dave, you just can't shake me this week.
I know. Wait, I've talked to you like three times already.
There's a Brian from Tacoma that's ahead of you, Brian, in Bellevue.
No, I am Brian from Tacoma.
Oh, you're Brian from Tacoma.
Oh, you're Brian from Tacoma. Yeah, I'm sorry. I said Bellevue.
Okay. Oh. All right. So you need
a biscuit when you see him.
All right.
All right. What's the reason why the Seattle Mariners are 51-31? Look at Brian. You're already trying to talk over me. Brian, don't talk over I'm just kidding. I'm kidding you. What's the reason why they're 51-31?
Well, you can't talk over Salk. You know that. So he's going to try and
call is going to say DePoto, Service, Gordon, and Segura. You can get in any order. Those are the top four. Mix and match any way you want. DePoto for his vision because he assembled the team. By the way, they should extend that man. Service, you're right. He's the puppeteer. He's pulled every right string all season long. And, again, that man should get an extension. Gordon, he's been the speed and athleticism. He's the heart of this team. Segura has been the constant driving force. There's a man who leads by example. He thinks a slump is only getting one hit. But number five is where the difference is in all the opinions. And number five is Robinson Cano.
What?
Because when he got popped for PEDs, he galvanized this team.
That's a number good response. I like Cano. That.
Wait a minute. You're going to give the reason why they're here, you're going to give it to a guy who got suspended for 80 games because he took PEDs.
I know. The number five reason.
Yeah, but Brian, I'm going to defend you here against Wyman because Jerry DePoto said as much when we talked to him.
That scares him. He said that you're on his side.
Oh, does it? Yeah. Oh, you listen to our show too. No, I think that's a good answer. I think it's crazy. I mean, you look at it on the surface, I thought, oh, man, losing the number three hitter, Robinson Cano, what he means to this team. And yet they've been gangbusters ever since, to the point that some people don't even want him back.
Galvanized the entire roster.
All right, thanks for the call, Brian. Really appreciate it. Ray in Bellevue. Ray, who's the reason why? One guy, why the reason why the Mariners are 51-31 right now?
Well, I gotta call somebody out that nobody's talked about, and that would be either Scott DePoto or Jerry Service. Because with those two combination, you got a winning combination in Seattle that we've been missing for a long time. So I get a combo vote.
Well, Ray, it makes you wonder too, doesn't it, why they don't have contract extensions to this point?
Well, you know what? I think it's going to come. I think as long as the Mariners keep going the way they are, the fans are going to start piling in even more than they did for the Boston series, and it's going to be very evident to management that they got to do something to keep the team together. You know, there's no I in team. There's I as in winning, but I think these guys need to be together as a team. It's a good combination.
All right, thanks for the call, Ray. Really appreciate it. Well, I think, you know, you get a lot of – I think D. Gordon, nobody really said Gene Segura yet. I mean, he was mentioned, but – I mean, there's the guy with the best stats. Gene always has a moment where his brain goes blank, and there was one last night when he went over and caught that fly ball where Seager would have had to have moved like 5 feet, and Gene came running like from 30 feet away. And then it happened again today with D. Gordon, where he goes, and look, I don't know what the rules are out there. I just know that D. Gordon was probably half the distance close to that fly ball as Gene Segura was.
It's funny. Every time I think that Segura is an okay defensive shortstop, he makes some tremendous plays. And so that part of him is overlooked because we're so into the hitting machine aspect of him. But, he's certainly making a good case for being at the All-Star game.
Hey, we really appreciate the calls. 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer. All right, next, we're going to sweep the dial, including a pants-pooping story. Jim, you love these, and I think you're starting to get on board that you maybe have done that, you do think it's funny.
It's recently happened, yes, Dave.
We'll talk about that next on Danny, Dave, and More.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Well, Fox was on the in a magazine back in the day, looking decent right here.
I've never seen this picture. Whoa, Pops. Where you? Oh, man, you got the nipples out.
There's D. Gordon on Intentional Talk. That's on MLB Network. Who's on that show? Is it Chris Rose and
Kevin Millar?
Kevin Millar. Yeah, it's a good show. So there's D. Gordon, and I don't know. You know, sometimes when we talk to him over the radio, it's hard to get kind of capture what he's all about. But if you watch the game today, man, first he had the taped-on helmet. He had looked like some athletic tape that he used to make a little buckle for his helmet because it falls off every single time. I saw one guy had to jump out of the way. I know the referee got hit in the leg with it. His thing. Always coming off. Then he did some flash thing where he flashed the other dugout, I thought is who he was doing that to. He pulled his shirt down. He had tattoos and a gold chain and everything. He started sticking his tongue out. The guy's nuts, but man, does he have a lot of fun, and he's my answer for the reason why they're 51-31.
Yeah, and he's a guy that appears to enjoy laughing at himself, too. And I think you and I can appreciate somebody like that.
Jim, I think everybody knows that you and I take radio very seriously.
So I get a kick out of him, and it's just, you want to have fun playing the game, and you forget sometimes we get caught up in the contract talk and all these different things, and so you wonder, with D. Gordon, it's just great to see that there's a kid out there playing at second base.
Well, and that's how it should be. You know, I was slumping one time, and you know what, Jim? A Coug helped me out. It was when I was in the NFL going into the 92 season. I had a bad 91 year, and Keith Millard and I became friends, and I know it's weird because we got in a fist fight on the tarmac that later that year.
He was a heck of a player.
But we were still fair. He was MVP of the NFL, and I know he led the league in sacks, but he told me, he goes, man, you just got to go out there like a kid on a playground. Remember what it was like at recess? Because that's, you get caught up and it's a business. I might lose my job, and ultimately you just have to go out and have fun. So at the end of D. Gordon's career, I don't think he's going to look back and go, wow, I wish I'd enjoyed it more. I mean, he's enjoying the heck out of it. But the thing that really hit me today, and the reason why I make him the biggest reason, is just because I look at his stats, and 296 is great. 21 stolen bases is great, but it doesn't even come close to what he does for that team.
I'm actually really good at everything I do, especially video games related, and I was being the s*** out of him. He was about to cry, and I was like, and I was enjoying it because that's what I like doing. I like kicking people's ass and literally being like in their faces, letting them know that they suck, they are trash, and that I'm better than them. Even on the court, he just gets mad about anything. I'm like, dude, just calm down. And that day, it wasn't a good day for him, but it was really bad. I can understand his frustration because I'm that good.
That's Joel Embiid trashing on his teammate T.J. McConnell over a video game and feeling like T.J. McConnell almost cried. He was beating him so bad. Why is it sometimes, like, I get a kick out of Joel Embiid, and I like watching him play.
I like his accent.
Yeah, I like his accent. Saw him live down there against the Suns when we were down there at Christmas time, and what a fantastic player. But it's funny how some guys, when they're cocky and they talk trash, I really get a kick out of them, and other guys I don't. But Embiid, I think he's funny.
It comes off funny, but you're right. Some guys can get away with it and some can't. I have this buddy I think you've met that's come in here, Nuu Faula, and he can say things that would get me slapped across the face or punched or whatever, and he gets away with it. Jess asked the question there, do you have a teammate like this before? Shannon Sharp. And maybe you can hear it a little bit whenever we have Shannon on. But If you ever see the old films, it was the year that I think they went to the Super Bowl, and he's on the Patriots sidelines, and he starts screaming out, "Down goes Frazier!"
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, he did that on NFL film. He got that from me. And the reason why is because we had a Papa Shot in the and he was the best by far at Papa Shot. He's one of those guys that could take it with one hand and
keep playing right there.
Each hand and throw him up there. And so finally one day I beat him, and he was like the champ. And so I never let him play me again after that. I just beat him, and I start screaming, "Down goes Frazier!" So, but he was one of those guys that would just constantly be on you, you know, and in practice telling you how terrible you are, and just, but he got away with it because I loved him. First of all, he's a great teammate, but yeah, he's one of those guys that just constantly was on top of you, always having fun. But I think if that was me, I would have got probably punched by my teammates.
Word on the street is that you have pitched in a big league game with poop in your pants. Is that, can that be confirmed?
Yeah, so I knew this was going to get brought up. I was prepared for it. You know, I'm prepared for every stadium I pitch in for them to toss toilet paper at me and all kinds of stuff. But I'm glad you asked it, because I want to talk about it.
Good. Give it to
for
us.
Every player in every clubhouse right now, every person sitting in the MLB studios, if you've gone through your life and you haven't pooped your pants on accident at some point, you're in the rarest, like, most exclusive club ever, or you're just flat out lying.
Here's what I think is funny about this.
This is Archie Bradley from the Diamondbacks.
Archie Bradley is talking about it. And, you know, this is a big sports thing, because the big fear is that you would do that out on the field. But what's so funny about it? Who poops their pants? Babies.
Correct.
Babies poop in their diaper. And that's what you turn yourself into a baby, is basically the reason why that's so funny.
The way people talk about it, it's like this has happened to everybody. And so I basically went from that's never happened to me to I guess this is eventually going to happen in my lifetime.
Yes, it is.
It's disheartening.
You know what? It's surprising that it hasn't happened during your tenure on the Danny, Dave, and Moore show.
Seriously, I feel like you guys would break me down, my intestinal fortitude.
But no, I mean, this guy's a relief pitcher, and just he told a whole story about that. And I just remember one time in warm-ups that Rufus Porter had done that, and Joe Kane came up and goes, don't tell him. I'm like, no, man, I can't do him like that. So I told Rufus, I went up and told him, and so he went running in the locker room. Because, look, before a game, your stomach gets upset, and you get all nervous, and I used to always take something that clogged me up, so I didn't have to worry about that. It was like I think it was a prescription thing that, like, you weren't going to go to the bathroom, trust me. So, yeah, I took that before every game just because I was like, man, that is too big of a distraction, and also it would be really embarrassing.
So have you had it happen in real life, though?
Yeah. Oh, off the field.
Like what, crossing the 520 bridge
No, I told you the story about in Denver when it's a certain establishment that serves burgers, and every time I eat there, it causes a problem, and this was in Denver. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, in Denver, that's where the Midwest begins, and so where we lived, it was just a flat plain, and there was no trees or anything, so there's no way I could pull off. And I thought, you know, if I did, and even if people saw me, nobody ever recognized me as a player. It'd be the one time when somebody go, "I think that's Dave Wyman, the middle linebacker for the Denver Broncos." So I just tried to wait till I got home, and then I ended up laughing, and because I was like, "This is ridiculous." I pictured myself on a changing table. Because we had a baby then. It was Jake. And I thought, you know, that's why I think it's funny, because you're like, you're a baby. But everybody's had some kind of a scare like that. The thing that's funny about why you hear it in sports so much is because you're out there on national TV.
You don't have a bathroom break until halftime anyway. I thought it would never happen to me until 2 weeks ago, and it actually did finally happen to me. And so I've never really laughed at these things. And then I thought, well, that's not going to happen to me until I'm in my 80s. And yet here I was at 61, parking my car up there, had River in the back seat. We were coming in to do an interview with Ryan Roland Smith.
Aren't you 61?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, here I am at 61. Is that what I said? I don't even know what I'm saying.
No, I just...
But it happened.
Fairly recent.
But that means you were in here.
Yeah,
after,
it happened.
Right after?
I had a paper towel in the ridgeline there, and that helped a little bit. But the whole time when I came down to do the Ryan Roland Smith interview, I was thinking, man, I hope Jess and Danny and Dave don't notice me waddling, or maybe that it smells, whatever the case might be. But as soon as that interview was over, I was, yeah, off to the bathroom.
Yeah, somebody said here, 509, dark pants should be mandatory for sporting events. I always wished I'd played for the Cleveland Browns for that reason. They have those brown pants. Yeah, nothing to worry about there. At least the Seahawk ones were silver. All right, enough of that. Coming up next, we'll talk to the professor.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
It's time for What We Learned, brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Jess!
Wait, you didn't do the bell.
I saw you over there doing the bell.
Danny substituted, Jim substituted for Danny on the triangle.
We miss Danny, don't we? He's coming back tomorrow at Edgar's Cantina.
That's great. I'm glad he's coming back.
I miss you guys. I don't know what to do with myself on days that we don't have shows and I don't get to see you guys.
Saw you yesterday on the golf course, so you should have seen Jess out there.
I
was faking it until I make it.
You texted me that you're on the golf course, and I was like, what? I didn't know you were a golfer.
What are you doing? Chasing varmints?
Apparently, you were on the golf course, and did you frequent the beverage lady?
Yes. We were with Jeff Gardner, which was awesome, with Miller Coors and Lori and Kathy from upstairs, who are both good at golf. It was my first time ever playing, ever.
It was a fun day, though. We had the Coors Lights going. And
that's great.
Yeah, we had a good time out at Druid's Glen.
That was a very humiliating game.
Yes.
And Jessamyn, I know your personality. Like, you punch inanimate objects.
Yes.
And so I bet you were squeezing the heck out of that club and trying to swing harder, and you were going to kill something.
God bless Kathy, because she really wants people to enjoy the sport, and she was coaching me the whole time. So I actually made some good connections after a while. But it takes a lot of failure.
Yeah.
Jim, did you introduce yourself as Coors Light drinker Jim Moore?
I think Jeff knows me as that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm pretty much, we had him going all day long.
Oh, hi, Jim. I'm a Diet Mountain Dew drinking Dave Wyman.
Oh, very good, Dave. Yeah, Coors Light drinker.
Sometimes
here.
Maker's Mark.
Yeah, me too.
I'm a third generation Coors Light drinker, Jessamyn McIntyre. So.
Third generation. Wow.
Generations of McIntyres.
Did we learn... Huh?
No. If I went to one of my dad's games, I was not allowed to come without a six-pack of Coors Light.
Is that right?
Yep.
So when you do like that search for your family tree, yours would have a keg of Coors Light in it?
Yeah, probably a 24-ounce.
There we go.
Not a keg. But anyway, or one of those ones that you can put the top back on. Those are awesome. Anyway, we learned some stuff today, starting with Jim only being here to help Jerry DePoto.
As good as you've been, Jerry, a lot of speculation that you need another starter or another reliever. How difficult will that be? And, boy, there's a lot of teams that are have-nots this year, but I imagine it's going to be difficult to get one of those guys. Boy, it'd sure be fun, though, Jerry, if you could bring Blake Snell home. I don't know if you can make that happen or not.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain he's not available. But to the point, the only real concern we have with our starting rotation is as the innings start to pile up.
You see, Jerry, that's what happens when you have a really good year. You know, the Segura trade, Haniger, you bring over Span, you have the success with all the trades, and then you get guys like Jim going, hey, why don't you go get Blake Snell? Or can you bring us Giancarlo Stanton? Right? I mean, the pressure's on now, right?
I'm 61 years old.
Direct Babe Ruth.
Yeah, Jerry, I'm 61. I've been watching the team since 77. I want to see a World Series before I go, so I'm just trying to help out a little bit if I can.
I do appreciate the help. There's no question.
What do you think his answer would
I don't
been?
Think he meant that.
What if they were...
Really?
What if they were 31 and 51? What his answer would have been?
You know, I don't know, but you know Jerry was just sitting there going, oh, man, I can't... I got to say something here. I'll just give him a courtesy comment.
Pull up a picture of Blake Snell, if you will. Tell me how old you think he is.
He's 23?
Well, he looks like he's 12, but he's got a 2.31 ERA, and he's 10-4. So, yeah, he's probably not available, as Jerry said.
Yeah. But, my goodness, he does look like he's in high school.
That's what happens when you're as good as Jerry. Like, oh, go make that happen. Oh, yeah, sure. That's like, remember Schneider? I'll go out to the starting pitcher tree in the backyard and pick one off.
Yeah, the offensive lineman tree.
Yeah.
We also learned a little bit about Wyman's emergencies.
Before game, you get your stomach gets upset and you get all nervous. And I used to always take something that clogged me up, so I didn't have to worry about that. It was like a, I think it was a prescription thing that, like, you weren't going to go to the bathroom. Trust me. So, yeah, I took that before every game just because I was like, man, that is too big of a distraction, and also it would be really embarrassing.
Hmm. So have you had it happen in real life, though?
Yeah. Oh, off the field.
Like what, crossing the 520 bridge
or something?
Oh, I told the
story. No, I told you the story about in Denver when I... It's a certain establishment that serves burgers, and every time I eat there, it causes a problem, and this was in Denver. And I thought, you know, if I did, and even if people saw me, nobody ever recognized me as a player. It'd be the one time mm-hmm. when somebody goes, oh, I think that's Dave Wyman, the middle linebacker for the Denver Broncos. Yeah, so I couldn't pull off to the side. And that was when I told that story last year, and somebody texted in from the station here, is he really telling this story? Like, yeah, I am. When I wasn't quite sure how my wife was going to react because we'd only been married like a year, but I kind of waddled up to the door and knocked on the garage door, and she came out. I said, go get me a bag and a towel, please, and a shovel so I can bury everything. But yeah, it was...
she was cool with it? She understood?
She thought it was funny. She falls into the quadrant of never has had an accident, but does think it's funny.
Mm. I'm in her quadrant, too.
Yeah.
How is that not funny?
Yeah, there's people that don't think it's funny. I think it's pretty rare. Jim didn't used to, but now do you see the
humor
in it?
No, now that it happened with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tried to pee in a bottle of Mountain Dew one time, too, when I was driving.
That doesn't work.
It didn't go
that
well.
That does not work.
A Gatorade would have been better. Gatorade bottle?
Pickle jar.
With the bigger...
My brother brings a pickle jar. He gave me that advice.
Pickle jar?
Yeah. There's a whole kit that you can put together, and it's called something that rhymes with kit. And you put it in a bag, and, you know, there's extra clothing and wipes and whatnot.
Yeah, when we took a little road trip together about a month ago, I said I had to stop on, you know, to use the ladies' room at one point, and you said, well, I got that in the car. Well, this isn't an emergency. We're civilized humans on a road with rest stops.
Hey, Jess, you never know. You never know.
I do appreciate the offer.
Yeah, caught out in the middle. I had to do it one time, an emergency one out in the middle of somewhere in like New Mexico. And the bush that I went behind looked like it was going to provide coverage. But when you're squatting behind it and the cars are racing by, it was like, I'm not really covered at all here. People were honking and everything. Yeah. But I was like, well, you know what? It's better than the alternative.
Finally, today we learned exactly why Wyman wanted in on Cleveland.
Yeah, somebody said here 509 dark pants should be mandatory for sporting events. I always wished I'd played for the Cleveland Browns for that reason. They have those brown pants. Yeah, nothing to worry about there. At least the Seahawks ones were silver. Yeah, that's not a good reason to play for the Cleveland Browns. Even though I think they're going to be good.
No, but you and I are old enough to remember when Cleveland was good.
Yeah.
I mean, the Browns were really good. The Brian Sipe years were good.
You remember, I just saw, it's John Elway's birthday today.
I saw that too, 58.
Yeah.
And he had the drive against the Browns.
Drive against the Browns. Yeah, that was, what, 86 when they were so good in the AFC and knocked them out a couple of times.
It was a 90-some yard drive, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a long
Something like that. We learn anything else, or should we get going? Let's get going. Let's get out of here. Hey, C. Raj, thanks for doing, did a great job
You're
on the
welcome.
Mariners postgame.
Thanks, Chris. Did we welcome the new intern?
Yeah, we don't give interns recognition.
Yeah, fellow Coug Jackson in there.
I'm going to create a monster in 3 months. How long are we going to stick with the kid?
I don't know. As long as he can hang.
All right.
I mean, yeah, we'll send him back Jackson. To school eventually. Jackson, welcome.
That's right. Jessamyn McIntyre, Jerry DePoto, John Clayton. Who else do we? Yeah, that's about everybody. Hey, tomorrow we'll talk to you from Edgar's Cantina.
Mike Leake.
Are we allowed? Oh, I was just going to say, are we allowed to divulge our guests?
Oh.
But Jim just spilled the beans. It's Mike Leake.
Went
seven strong innings today.
We got Mike Leake.
Yeah. And we'll have Clayton, of course. And Danny O'Neill, the triumphant return of Danny O'Neill.
You're not going to screw things up by saying that I said that Mike Leake was terrible at one point on this show. Don't
I'm not going to sell you out because you didn't yell at Chris Sale to come up here and, hey, this guy thinks he can beat you up. So
right. Well,
I'll leave
you.
The Leake thing alone.
All right.
You said you could hit him.
Okay.
At least for now. That's what I think.
Curtis is doing that finger
All
thing.
All right. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3 o'clock.